First, I'd like to thank the OU and Rabbi Frank Buchweiss for inviting me here, and I'd like to thank Rabbi Schwartz and all you lovely, warm people, and Nicole, for being here this morning in this very cold, well, not so cold, but in this very snowy day. They say that nothing stops New Yorkers, and even though I came from New Jersey, I was born and bred in the Bronx, so maybe that catches. As a licensed professional counselor at YNJ, we've had, of course, a variety of parenting issues over the years. The good thing is I'm also a parent, and even worse, I'm a mother-in-law, so, so we've all had some experience. Excuse me. Your overall title, Positive Jewish Parenting, we're all feeling very positive about parenting. Parenting is, as Rabbi Schwartz said, the most important thing we will ever do in our lives. And as for being Jewish, we want our children to grow in the Torah values that we feel they should have. All of this fits in very well with our topic, which is setting limits. I've taken the liberty of also adding establishing boundaries, because setting limits and establishing boundaries go hand in hand, even though they aren't quite identical. So we have to realize that setting limits with children never comes in a vacuum. You can't just say to a child, you can do this, you can't do that. You can say that because you're the parent. But the question is, how will we get them to respond and listen the way we want them to? So I outlined everything I'm going to touch on today. But before I go through that list, I'd be interested to know the age groups of most of the children here. How many people have children who are 10 or older? Oh, okay, cute. And how many people have children in the middle age group of, let's say, from 5 to 9? And most of you, I take it, have babies. How many people have children under 3? So this is where our focus is. Actually, the actual age that you're dealing with will be discussed at great length in your next session with Dr. Annette Berger, who I'm proud to say is a colleague and a very good friend for all the years which she has been with working with me at YNJ, or I've been working with her, we've been working together. The first thing we have to think about in a family is the structure of the family. The parents, the mother, the father, the husband, the wife. When you first get together and you first have your marriage, it's like a merger of two totally different companies, almost countries. You have different habits, you have different routines, you have different feelings about things. You have been a child, and now's your chance to create a different kind of family. And even though you may have talked about it at great length, actually living it out is a much harder concept and practicality than the ideal that you would be discussing. So what happens with a new family, you are a blend, really, of an emerger, and the question is how you're going to go about it. The first thought is, oh no, this is not what I expected. The second thought is, now what are we going to do? And the key to this, of course, is mutual cooperation, and the word cooperation means to cooperate, to work together. And when you set up your family structure where your husband and wife, who are the future parents, are actually working as partners, whether you agree or disagree about everything doesn't matter. But how you work out those differences is really the key and the beginning of building the foundation of your family. And for the future, if you're on the same page at least, sometimes one is more influential, sometimes the other parent is more influential, you reduce immediately the manipulation of your future children, because as soon as they see a little crack, you know, they make it into a big gaping hole if they can. And that doesn't really work, because if they're playing parents against each other, then everybody is feeling uncomfortable, and the children are really not feeling very secure. They may want to make that break, but they really feel better when you are very strong. You might remember there was a television commercial a couple of years ago, in the last year or so, about anti-drugs. And the children would be arguing with the parents. The parents said, no, you can't go to the party. The children were young teenagers and maybe just before that in age. And then a child would come out of the frame, talk to the people and say, I need my parents to say no, but I have to fight them. And then she'd go right back into the middle of the program and continue yelling at her parents, you have to let me go, but hoping that they would say no. And so we will get to that as well. Now, in building your family, in establishing boundaries, I'm in the establishing boundaries section now, you have the long-range goals and the short-range, the short-term goals. And the long-range goal, you want your child to grow up to be a secure and confident human being who probably follows your Torah values or the Torah values of the schools that you send your children to, or the combination of the two, because the parent always has control if the parent wants to take control. But in short-term goals, you have to deal with every day. You have to deal with going to the supermarket or going to get them ready to go in a carpool or going to a friend or going any place with you. And the question is, how do you do that? As the children get older, they have to get up and make a school bus or be walked to school. You can see I'm from the suburbs. We think school buses first. I don't know if you have your children walk to school. And the question is, are they going to get there when they're supposed to? And are you going to get where you have to go when you're supposed to? Whether you work or have an appointment with somebody, you still have to take yourself out and get yourself ready as well. And these children have to fit into the family structure. Easier said than done. And we've all had horrible stories about how everything was going smoothly and then somebody threw a temper tantrum. And that was the end of that, and it started spreading like wildfire. But the point is how we deal with it. If we as parents melt and have a meltdown, so we're not going to be able to get children past that. So this is one of the things we have to deal with. How do the children learn to have acceptable behavior both in the home and out of the home? And in the home, as you have more and more children and they start fighting more and more, some days you just need cotton in your ears so that you don't hear the noise, but of course that isn't always going to be practical, and I don't recommend it actually. But the important thing here is that your children know that you have unconditional love for them. If they feel that whether no matter what they do, you're going to love them still and not say, I love you if. Now, of course you're not going to say, I love you if. But sometimes children will interpret it. Oh, I was so horrible. My mother and father will not love me anymore. And, you know, you have to constantly reassure them. Of course I love you, but I don't like your behavior. Your behavior is not acceptable. Now, that's very rational, and children can be very irrational, but they hear us, and that's the thing we need to really remember. Children understand, I think as young as about a year old, not everything, they don't have the vocabulary, they do have the intelligence, and they do observe what's going on all around them. So, if you have mutual cooperation and partnership between husband and wife, and you're never insulting to each other, you can yell and scream, but about an issue, as opposed to, how could you do a stupid thing like that, which we all sometimes say anyway, it comes out, and you can say, I didn't really mean it quite like that, or whatever, to work it out. The children absorb that. They recognize that there is a pattern to the way you disagree, and they learn to follow that pattern to the best of their ability as they're growing older. So the constant themes that I think have to be in all parenting, whether it's setting limits or doing anything else, and setting limits and establishing boundaries is really the same thing as getting along with your children and teaching them to be good human beings who can function in this world, is respect and consistency. Respect for each other, even in disagreement, even in an emotional outburst, is never an excuse for not having respect for another person, whether it's physical or verbal, or body language, in ways like that. And as a parent, you can say if the child's disrespectful, unless the child is really embroiled in an emotional outburst, at which point you really need to wait till that child can get past that, I think you need to point out that there is a more appropriate way for you to say what you mean. And if the child is 2 or 3 years old, you can say, excuse me, you know, and is the 2-year-old going to get that right away? Of course not. But if it's repeated, that's where the consistency comes in. If you're consistent in the way you deal with issues, your child is going to learn that there's a pattern and there's a structure. And that's where setting limits begins. In many ways, it's good that there are so many of you who have very young children, because now is the time to really start dealing with that. I will say that when I lived in Israel, my daughter was an infant. We had a babysitter who was a Rebbetzin, who tried to tell me that at 6 months old I could toilet train her. And I see that it seems to have come up someplace in this area again. I don't really think that makes any sense at all. From my point, it didn't work for me at any rate. And I wasn't going to stand there and, you know, deal with what had to be done at that time until the child was ready. I didn't think that was really productive. But the consistency and the repetition and the respect, that can come across because the child picks up on it. Again, there's nature as well as nurture. So you can have a child who's a very sensitive child, who's highly emotional, who reacts and responds in so many different explosive ways, or just sits and cries. And yes, that's a different kind of situation, which we can talk about as well. But that's not the overall structure. That's the individual person. And just like as a teacher, you have to be able to respond to each student in the classroom, you also need to look at your children that way. And so the hard part here is when you're dealing with little children and you have a full-time job, or I don't know how many in this area have both parents working, but at some point, people have other activities to do as well, if it's not only work. And at some point, your children need to know that you too have a life. I still remember when my mother used to say to me, you know, I'm a person too. And I'd look at her like, what are you talking about? How are you a person? You're my mother. Then when I was the mother and I had to deal with that, and I looked at my daughters and I said, you know, I'm a person too, thinking about, you're never going to say what your mother said until you say it, right? And they look at me like, you're a person too, and I had to laugh. My mother did not laugh. She kept a very straight face. But I laughed because there you are, right in the middle of the two. So it's really one set of rules, and that's the consistency and the respect. Now, for the developmental stages of growth, we set different needs for different people at different times. So if your older child is asked to do something and he says, or she says, well, you don't make this other one do it, who's like 2 or 3 years younger, you have to point out, you're the older child, you have different responsibilities. When you were that little, you didn't do it. But the good side is you have certain privileges, and you point out you can do this, but when you were that age, you couldn't do that. And so single-minded children will hear it and tuck it away, ignore it, and give you a hard time. But you stand firm. You know, you don't have to yell and scream. That's the interesting thing. You don't have to yell and scream. Did I yell and scream at times? I did. I did more than I wanted to because that's not really my nature. But then you do things you don't expect that you're going to do. And so you get yourself under control. You take a deep breath and say, I read in one source says, apologize to the child right away and say, I didn't mean to yell at you, but I did mean to yell at you, you know? So I'm sorry that my temper got the better of me, but I'm feeling very strong about it, and we have to sit down and talk about this when we're both calmer, you know. And what are you doing there? So you're making a communication link with the child. The child knows that you're hearing the child. And you know that you're talking to a person who loves you as much as you love him or her, but who doesn't have the same life experience that you do. Which in one way is comforting, and in another way is a little scary, because here you are with this responsibility. So those are the different expectations. And as children get closer to declaring their independence, I'm thinking about third to fifth grade. If you have children between the ages of 8 and 10, that's the time they're really feeling who they are as individual people. You know, the preschoolers will watch, and if you look at babies, even when you see them in the hospital, they're in the nursery, and they have no personality that you can really identify. They look like little blobs, right? As soon as that child is picked up by a parent, personality just comes to life. And that's the thing about nurturing and loving children. They respond. They want to respond. That's who they are. That's their nature. They feel that you care about them. They feel that you're different. You're not the nurse that's just supposed to take care of them. You are the baby's parent. And I think that's true of both mothers and fathers, because children get that awareness. So you can begin talking to your child as young as infancy, and maybe in utero you can start having, that's my thing, you may not feel so comfortable doing that, but I'm a big believer in talking immediately. As soon as that neshama is connected, you can put out that kesher and make that child feel like the child is a part of you and your family. Okay, now when the child comes out, it's a little harder, as we said, but children read our signals, and they do it from, they're used to it, because they're used to, I really believe that, Harvard has done some tests on this, that there are some responses, consciousness responses, even from a fetus. So much more so when the baby is out in the world and feels the loss of the safety of the womb. And so when you're holding that child feels that sense of security. And so you have to change it as you're growing, as the child is growing, and as you're growing as a parent. And so when you're setting limits, you know, a child starts to throw a toy on the floor, that's the first time you're setting a limit. No. We don't do that with a toy. Ha, 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 I'm going to do that. But then, okay, you're not ready to play with that now, and you put it out of sight. And then you take the child and have the child do something else. So you've already started to set limits. And this child knows that this is the behavior. You take a child to the supermarket at the age of 4. You have another baby in your in the shopping cart as you're going along. Well, the 4-year-old's throwing a fit. I want to go into the shopping cart too. You put the baby and the 4-year-old in the shopping cart, you have no room for the shopping. So this baby now, this 4-year-old who's still a baby, but is usurped by this other baby, says, well, I want to go there now, and what are you going to do in the supermarket? You can give in, or you can say, well, we have 2 choices now. If you want the food, we have to stay here. And you can't go in the wagon. If you don't want the food, tell me right now and we will leave. Now I know a woman who had 5 children. She would take them in, that used to be a big family. In Teaneck, it's not a big family anymore. Now they're up to 8 to 12 in a lot of the year. Not so many, but more than a few. And so, as soon as there was a fight, no matter how far they were from the destination, she would turn around and go home. And it was over. No discussion. She didn't have to do that too often, because they wanted to be where they had to be. Or I used to say to my children, if you want to be invited to people's houses, you have to be the kind of person they want to have in their houses. And if you're going to act poorly, or you're going to have poor manners, they're not going to invite you back so soon. They're not going to invite me back, but I can go out with them in the evening if I choose to. I don't have to come on a Sunday afternoon and take you too. I can leave you home with a babysitter, you know, and they thought about that, you know. Do I want to be the kind of person who's left home and misses everything out there that's happening, or do I want to go? Now, of course, this is an overview, and it doesn't happen all the time. There are times when you do have to leave the supermarket, and you do have to leave the food there and say, just take what you can if you need to, absolutely, or ignore it. You know, I used to go home and call my mother and say, it was so humiliating. She was yelling and screaming and banging that shopping cart. My mother said, did you ever look around to the other parents who were having the same problem? No, I was in my own world and my own problem, and I didn't really care about them. That wasn't my problem. This was my problem. But you know what? People do understand that. So immediately our sense of security can go up. This is normal. There are developmental norms, and that's why I included that here. There are developmental norms, there are developmental expectations, and there are ways of reading up on each stage. And as I said, Dr. Berger will focus at great length at the ages that most of you have children. But remembering that there are signals that the child will respond to, if you know a child is very sensitive, for example, and you go and you have to go someplace and you're concerned that maybe the child won't make it through, you can sit down and talk to this child and say, you know, we're doing this and this today, and I know you like to know in advance what's going to happen. I can't tell you everything that's going to happen because I don't know. You know, I have no nevuah. I have no way of knowing everything that's going to happen. But in general, this is our plan. Do you think you're going to have a good time? Don't you think you're going to have a good time? Not do you think you're going to have, but don't you think you're going to have a great time as we go through it? There may be parts you don't like so much, but, you know, there'll be great parts that you'll have a terrific time with. And you set the child up for a positive experience. And now, the important thing is for parents to be role models. If you and your partner, your spouse, your husband, your wife, the other parent involved, and there are different kinds of families, as we know. There's the blend family, the second time around, as a result of divorce or death that does happen in this world today, and so you're blending different families together. There are broken families where the father and mother may not have realized that they were getting their children embroiled in the middle of their problems, but it's never too late to establish a partnership for the sake of the child. So I'm not going to ask who in this group is in that situation, but if you are, there are plenty of ways that you can be helped through that. But if you remember when you were a child, which isn't so long ago, even though it's longer for me, I don't feel like it's so long ago. And the reality is that if you think of how you looked out from your eyes into the world as it was happening to you, and you can stop for a moment and get into your child's way of thinking, because you know your child better than anybody, if you can do that and you can see get some kind of an insight, knowing the child's personality, and take that time to do that, you can relate to that child on a different level. And the child will respond with a lot of gratitude, even though you might not see it immediately. I will say that that when my daughter got married, she said, I don't know how you did it, but somehow you managed to stick through even the hardest times. And I thought, wow. You know, that was a gift. And there are times when you just want to cry because how am I going to deal with this child? Or you want to, you know, my favorite role in life at that temper tantrum time was holding my ears, doing Lamaze breathing, and remembering how much I loved that baby. When the temper tantrum was over and we could talk about it, so then I could get into another situation with her. But how you as a parent demonstrate respect is really a key factor for your children's growth in this area. because if they see that you're sensitive to each other and to them and to the people around, like if you're from a business point of view, if you are not always, shall we say, as kind as you could be to people who work for you or people you see on the street or people in the stores, not that anybody here would fall into that category, but if they see you do that, so they think, oh, it's all right not to be nice to some people, as opposed to being nice to everybody. And what does nice mean? You know, nice means following a Torah value of respecting everybody. Nobody needs to be disrespected, even if you're angry with them, as we said, and it even applies to people in stores who seem to take their negativity pills or other problematic pills to make your life extra hard on a difficult day. But that's besides the point. If you still say, treat this person with respect, your child learns by watching you. Children actually memorize their parents. You know, they're not going to let you know it, but they do. They do memorize you. Now, what if you make a mistake? So we said earlier, if you make a mistake, you could say, oh, I'm sorry, but, you know, I am sorry and I'm not sorry. I really felt that way. I really felt that I had to just yell because it was my turn to yell. I listened to all the yelling I could stand, and I just had to get out that bellow. You know, and as I said, what you do then is take a deep breath. You're the adult. If the child sees that you've lost it, briefly, hopefully, the rule is you never punish a child when you're in an angry state yourself. Certainly never physically. Certainly never verbally. But if it happens, so you sit down with them and you say, this, I was very upset. Like, I know you get very upset. And I'm the adult and I should have known better. But you know what? As a person, like I said before, as a person, it just came out that way. It wasn't the best way. And we have to all try not to feel that way. To a certain extent, you can't really always control your feelings, but to the fact that you feel. You can control your feelings, but you can't control the fact that you feel in a certain way. And you can point out that I am working very hard not to lose it and to keep myself under control so that I do something else instead of letting out my anger to hurt somebody else. Because hurting people is not acceptable. Whether it's your brother or your sister or yourself, whether it's your mother or your father or your nanny or anybody else around, it's not your babysitter, it's not your way that's appropriate as a human being to hurt another person. So what you're showing here is, again, a repetition of the two themes that we have and the underlying one of unconditional love. The two themes of respect and consistency. Okay, so now we're up to demonstrating and encouraging self-confidence and self-worth. So then you come around at times when there isn't a heavy emotional experience and you can talk about the good things a child does or the good things other people do, or you have dinner together and each one talks about the day. So you can do that to a certain extent even with 2.5 to 3-year-old. Okay, what did we do today? Was it fun? Yes, we had great fun. You know, we had always keeping it in a positive situation. And mommy was really happy with you. Daddy was really happy with what we did today. It was a good thing for us to spend time together, whatever language level your child is at. And as a result, we're all going to get something special. I would say to try to keep away from food, because we know that eating disorders today, most of them deal with control. So if a child feels out of control and needs to comfort himself or herself with some kind of food or gets a reward of food, so that becomes a connection that we prefer not to work with today. An occasion, yes, you know, we're going out to a restaurant, pizza, you know, ice cream as a family outing. So we're all having a good time. It's not the same thing as, oh, you can have an extra dessert tonight because you were so cool. Well, that's the kind of thing, or here's an extra piece of candy, you know, then the child feels, oh, comfort comes from food in this way. So the important thing here is learning to feel confident in what they do and what we all do, and that we're worthwhile human beings. That's a very important part that we all need to feel. You know, when you think about parents, stay-at-home mothers or stay-at-home fathers, depending on your family structure, sometimes people say, what? You just stay home and you don't do anything? Well, think about what you don't do, of anything, when you do stay home and you have 5 trillion things that you never get to when you've done 4 trillion things already. And so it's very satisfying to know you've accomplished things, and staying at home and parenting is probably one of the highest level of experiences that and life production or product that you could actually do. But that doesn't mean it's the only way to raise children. Working parents can also find meaningful moments, as long as you're not leaving your babysitter as the dominant parent, and you're the dominant parent because you are the parent. That's really, really what the child needs to know. Not that, oh, well, I'm working hard so that you could have everything. But what is everything when you don't feel that you have your parents' connection to you or love or understanding? The self-confidence and self-worth that you're giving to these children by showing them that they're good human beings and developing nicely, and if they make a mistake, they can correct it. Once you make a mistake, it doesn't mean that you're bad forever. It means, oops, you didn't do something so well this time, but with a little bit of effort next time, we will help you get through it. And so you learn, you teach them to learn how to solve their problems as opposed to avoiding problems. If you say, you're going to deal with something later on and you never get to it, the child just feels that that's the way you deal with a problem. You just don't do anything about it. You just ignore it and sweep it under the rug. And, of course, the rug may end up with a very nice big bump under it for a visual experience. But children have to learn that you are there for them. Whether it's a social problem, if they have a problem getting along with someone from a play date or someone in school, whether it's a personal problem, if they have a habit that makes them less desirable to have around, you can help them to get past that regardless of the age. If they go to an academic situation, even preschool, especially preschools today are very, shall we say, intense, to say the least, as the United States and the rest of the world are racing to get intellectual giants, and not all of us are intellectual giants, so school can sometimes be a source of great frustration and aggravation for children. The question is, what's important about that school experience, starting with preschool, and how do you as a parent partner with the school? And so for many of you who are starting out with your youngest children now, 2 and 3, you start to visit different schools to see what they have to offer. Most of the schools today are good. They're just good. The question is what you want your child to get in the way the school handles different issues. And that's where you need to sit down with the administration in terms of how they deal with different kinds of problems that children have, what's their idea about academics, and does every child have to be a star, and if the child is not a star, is the child going to get lost and fall through the cracks? These are the kinds of things you need to find out. I don't think every child needs to be a star. I think every child needs to feel a sense of success. And with multi-intelligences today and multi-talents and multi-everythings, each person is unique, and each child has to be regarded as such. And so you're going to sit down and you're going to advocate to your child, with your child. Does this mean if it, like I had a fifth grade parent who came to me and said, all of a sudden, I heard about the chutzpah dik way my child and her